Welcome to Rocking Our Prayers. I'm your host, Dr. Alice Evans. Now, what led to the demise of foot binding? From 1905 to 1920, the percentage of adult women with bound feet in Taiwan declined from 68% to 11%. This may be the fastest cultural change in human history. In one generation, Taiwanese women were largely confined to their home, barely able to hobble. In the next, they could walk freely. What led to this enormously rapid shift in gender norms? Is it culture? The conventional explanation from Mackie is that foot binding persisted as a signal of chastity, improving girls' position in the marriage market. China, arguably, overcame this collective action problem because numerous parents publicly pledged not to bind their daughters' feet. Seeing wider support, others ceased to anticipate social sanction, they no longer feared for their daughters' marriage prospects, and therefore if enough people simply express opposition, culture is malleable. Indeed, right from the beginning of the Japanese occupation of Taiwan in 1895, the colonial administration initiated public campaigns and sponsored movements led by local elites to eradicate foot binding. Before 1905, this was quite effective in discouraging parents from binding their daughters' feet in the first place, but it did not cause already bound women to unbind their feet. So there are two different things happening here. One is whether parents choose to bind their daughters' feet. The other is whether women's feet who are already bound choose to unbind. And that didn't happen with the top-down campaign. So what about economics? Nora Chen, Elliot Fan and Song Min-Wu highlight rising demand for labour. From 1905 to 1915, Taiwan's sugar industry boomed. Cane cultivation was extremely labour-intensive, far more so than rice. In Brazil and the Caribbean, demand was met by slaves. But there were no slaves in Taiwan. So what happened? Taiwanese farmers increasingly chose to grow cane, then mobilised as much labour as they could muster, either as family members or hired labourers. Demand was so great that they hired a rising number of women. Now, women whose feet were already bound actually unbound their feet, causing considerable pain, in order to seize new economic opportunities. Now, you may wonder, well, what about endogeneity? Maybe more conservative families prioritise female seclusion, so refuse to adopt this labour-intensive crop. Or perhaps foot binding just fell as part of a broader process of economic growth. To address these concerns, Chen and colleagues use cane railroad density as their instrumental variable for sugarcane adoption. These special railroads were designed, built, and owned by the sugar corporations. They serve no other purpose. Now, Chen and colleagues find that cane cultivation is strongly associated with the demise of foot binding. So they find that a one standard deviation increase in the proportion of sugarcane land is associated with a 4.9 or a 7.2 percentage point increase in the reduction of bound women in 1915. So the more land devoted to sugarcane, the fewer bound women. And if you look at my Substack, you'll see all the different tables of their regressions. Now, curiously, Bossin and Hill Gates make a very similar argument about the demise of foot binding in China. They suggest that Chinese families bound their daughters' feet in order to immobilise them and extract maximum labour at the loom. And then when railways brought cheaper industrial goods, families ceased to bind their daughters' feet so they could move into new productive activities. Chen and colleagues also find a tipping effect. That is, once a practice becomes adopted, everyone follows suit. So what does this case study tell us about East Asian gender relations more broadly? For me, Chen and colleagues' paper captures two central aspects of East Asian culture. One, collectivism, and two, ideas of upward mobility and economic prosperity. So East Asians generally pay close attention to their peers. So once behaviour becomes widespread and publicly visible, everyone else follows suit. So collectivism enables a very rapid reduction of foot binding. Secondly, and I think this is not acknowledged enough, at least by those outside East Asia, East Asians tend to highly value upward mobility. Hence, they readily exploited new economic opportunities and sent their daughters to work in sugarcane fields. That desire for economic prosperity also helps explain why subsequent industrialization led to a rapid rise in female employment. Now, other people, other scholars, they've attributed East Asia's rapid rise in female labour force participation to communism, the one-child policy, economic growth, or good jobs. But those explanations are incomplete. As Chen and colleagues demonstrate, Taiwanese families sought economic prosperity, so rapidly abandoned cultural practices in response to shifting opportunity costs. South Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa have not seen the same response to economic opportunities due to far stronger ideals of female seclusion. When mills opened up in 1900s Calcutta, women remained at home, working at a third of the wage. Economics was trumped by purdah. So, bravo to Nora Chen, Elliot Fang, and Son Min Wu by carefully demonstrating how foot binding plummeted in response to sugarcane labour demand. They also shed light on a huge part of the puzzle, how East Asian culture was extremely responsive to economic incentives. That's a key part of the great gender divergence. Thank you very much for listening, and best wishes to you all.